From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Some people say laughter is universal, but historically, African-American humor has been divided. Some was created for black audiences, another was for whites. Today, African-American comics are bridging that divide. In today's special roundtable, we take a look at African-American comedy. NPR's Tony Cox went straight to the source for this chat with three L.A.-based comics, Alex Thomas, Buddy Lewis, and Kim Whitley.
I'm going to start with you, Kim, because I want to know, what makes African-American comedy different?
I think that we are not pretentious. We are real. This is what happens in our life. And we're more gutsy. I think that's what really brings it out there. We're going to say it like it is and what's going on. We're going to talk about the stuff that happens in the hood and stuff that doesn't happen in the hood. We're going to talk about if we got roaches, if we don't have roaches. And I think other cultures, not mentioning anyone, the WASP, won't really, you know, they got roaches. They're not going to talk about it.
The politically correct word is Anglo-Saxon.
They dance around it. I think when it comes to black folk, there ain't no such thing as politically correct. It's like, if it's funny, it's funny. I'm not thinking, oh, I can't say this, and, you know, oh, that's too edgy. No.
It's the duality that black people have.
Is that a new word?
No.
Buddy's got a dictionary over there.
I see that. Okay, I'm trying to educate the Negro masses.
Educate them.
Okay. The word is duality, and what I mean by that is we live in two worlds. We live in the homeboy, you know, hip-hop world, and we have to live in the corporate world, so that allows us to see both sides of different of lifestyles.
That's a good point, too, because we have to be able to go both ways. May I never forget, Mark Curry told me this once. He said, man, a white comic can go his whole career, never, ever, ever have to set foot on a black stage.
Absolutely.
Could care less if one black person ever in life
laughed
at their joke, and they could still become stars. Any and every black comic there ever was that really, really, really made it, you know, the average white person in Montana had to love him and like him and know who he was.
But I think times are changing, though. I think, like, I think because of Def Jam and different avenues, I think when it was Richard Pryor, I definitely think, you know, you had to go both ways for people to really. Now, I think, you know, since the kings of comedy, queens of comedy, I believe those were all black audiences.
Avenues
have now, you know, because what happens now is with the Tyler Perrys and different things that have happened is now the other side, they come and find those persons because they're like,
they're
who
much
is
more
this
aware
huge?
Of us now. Yeah. They're much more aware
but
of us.
But what's the appeal?
It's not necessarily an appeal, it's the appreciation for that culture in America. I think part of white America, there are more white people that grow up around black people. They're around more black people, so they understand it. It's not an appeal. I think it's an understanding.
And one major thing is two words. I'm a product of it. It's called hip-hop.
Right, and hip-hop.
Hip-hop is so big. I always tell people like this, like over the last 2 years, I've been everywhere from, like, Scotland to perform, and I've been to London to perform in Amsterdam, and I used to be like, people would ask me, do they get your jokes over there? And I say, thank God to hip-hop they do. And when I say thank God to hip-hop, I mean the same way the average kid in Scotland, London, and Amsterdam gets Snoop Dogg's lyrics, gets Nelly's lyrics, gets Jay-Z's lyrics, he gets my jokes.
Really?
Yeah, because you got to think about it. In London right now, in Amsterdam right now, in Australia right now, they're watching MTV all day long. They get Young Jock, they get Jay-Z, so they're hearing hip. They know what the words are. They know what the lingo is. They know what holla at your boy is. They know what it was cracking. They know all that stuff. So therefore, it's not a foreign language anymore. Everyone gets it. And I think black people, since the beginning of time, we've always been cool. And every white man's dream in the world is to have a cool black friend. Because he wants to say, I'm down. I know the handshake.
Yeah.
Really. You know what I mean?
Well, Kim, let me ask you this, because we're surrounded by two men, you know, comics, and
well,
you're a female.
One and a half.
Well, we're not going to say which
part
one.
Part beast.
Is,
okay,
buddy.
Sorry.
I'm the one, people.
Poor buddy. I'm sorry for you, buddy. It's just
that's all right. You know what? Kim,
like
Kim is my. You know what? You mentioned that we're the host. Kim hosts a comedy room. I'm the co-host with her, Whacked Out Wednesdays at Sarah's Dine and Dance. And we've been together about 10 years. And I listen to her.
So you're used to getting cracked on by her.
No, it's just a deep-seated. It's a deep-seated. She wants me and can't have me.
I understand that.
Go on, Tony. Go on with your question.
Here's my question. Well, let's ignore him for a second.
And look that up.
As a female comic and a black female comic, do you find that it's any different for you as far as, A, the kind of material that you can put together, B, people getting your jokes, and some of that crossover appeal that we were talking about?
First of all, we're in a man's world. It still has not changed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this might sound crazy, but it's harder to be a good-looking comic female comic, right. Black, white, Asian, I don't care, is difficult. No
why?
Matter
tell
what.
Them why. Tell them why. Because I think I know why. I want to
yeah,
hear.
Well, one thing is when you hit the stage, first of all, the women are like, oh, she better be funny. The men are like, wow, man, she fine. I know she not funny. So, therefore, you come in, you got to be a gorilla. You got to come in.
Well, now, that's why Kim's sexy, but Kim, so you Kim know, you're no gorilla now. Come
no,
on
no,
now.
Kim's,
what's she saying?
Kim's beautiful. That's why I tell her to just allow that hair on her face to grow a little bit longer. Take out her weave every now and then and come in her regular hair and scare the people to death to laugh.
Right, I haven't been able to get my new weave because I haven't been able to get the hair off your back.
Yes, it,
how about that?
Ooh.
I'm sorry, Tony. All right. Focus.
Alex. I love watching. See, I've been there for 10 years watching these two go back and forth on stage. It is great, and I love it. And I'm going to tell you why.
Go ahead with the women.
See,
thing,
Kim,
Alex,
Kim is beautiful to me. She's always been super sexy, and it's hard to mix sexy with comedy because that's from a man's point of view. I'm going, I don't care what she got to say.
Not
look at her
right.
butt.
I got it.
Look
got
at
it.
Her
and,
chest.
And especially
you know
the female comics who are trying to be cute. Never yeah. works. You go up, but if you go up and you're real and you're like and raw and this is what how I am, and as a female comic, you just say, okay, I got a bad weave today. You break the audience down to say, you know what, I'm just like you. Okay, I might be cute right now, but I'm not always cute. Yeah. Or whatever it is, and you bring the audience to you and be real, but it is that perception. And as far as the jokes are concerned, I think, especially female comics, we all have the same problems. A woman is a woman. A woman has male problems, has job problems, and I think funny is funny.
Really? I think also, too, a lot of African women aren't willing to self-deprecate like men are. You can go on stage and talk about your faults. And for women, I think sometimes that's a little difficult to go on stage and to claim those faults that they're trying to hide with makeup, hair, and all of that other stuff.
That
so
is true.
It's hard to go up there and claim that stuff. So you got to, you as a man, I can talk about how fat I am. I can talk about how bald I am. I can talk about what sexual prowess I do not have, and it can all be self-deprecating humor. For a woman, I think sometimes that's tough.
Now, how hot are Black comics right now, and how easy is it to get work for you
guys?
Work and hot is two different things.
Right.
Exactly. We're about to quantify.
Work and hot are two different things. It's two completely different things. Like, we're the box office, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. When you look at some of the biggest numbers there is in the business, it's TV shows over the years, you know what I mean?
Look at the top people in Hollywood right now. Almost, if you look at the top 10 money grossing guys that open movies, four or five of them are comics that can open movies. We look at Chris Tucker, Eddie Murphy,
right.
Jamie Foxx.
Will Smith's not
Will
a comic.
Smith,
funny.
But
he
is.
But
funny.
He has a
you know
comic
I mean?
Actor, yeah. you know, yeah. and those people are Chris Rock. Those people are all huge.
Dave Chappelle.
Yeah,
and the list goes on.
And the list goes on. But once you get past that list of guys, there's me and Alex and Kim and all these other people that are like, woo, I hope I don't have to go in here and beg.
And the only bad part as far as when you bring up that thing about work, you're like, as far as I have to say, there's no way to beat around it. Like with white Hollywood and casting, it's like whoever gets hot, they want that guy. Like the joke in Robert Townsend's movie.
Get us Eddie Murphy.
Get us someone Murphonic.
Someone
Murphic.
Murphic.
Someone that's Murphy-like. Like,
Murphy-esque.
You know, I don't know how many times I've been on auditions in the last 2 years and the description, whether because I do a lot of cartoons and I do a lot of voiceovers. And a Chris Rock type. A Dave Chappelle type. Give us a Chris Tucker-ish. Like, you know, not to realize where white comics go, there's... It's thousands of different genres. With us, it's almost like, you know, if you can't be like this guy, that guy, that guy, it's really hard to get work unless you blow up and you make it on your own.
I'll give you a perfect example.
Go on.
Okay, yesterday I went over to the Oprah show. This is how you know what your world is and who knows you. Oprah says, you know, knows who I am. It's Kim Whitley. Kirstie Alley, I talked to her for 5 minutes and she was like, oh, you're an actress.
No clue.
So, no clue.
Really?
So that's
And
this is why I think as Black comics, this is one thing we have to do. We have to be versatile in how we approach the business. You can't just say, I'm a comic. You've got to be able to write. You got to be able to do warm up. You got to be able to voice over.
And it goes so to that the whole thing keep, about being black. You got to be at it 10 times better. You what be you just few, said.
Yeah.
And off of what you said, Cam. Oh, this is crazy. Jamie Foxx told us this story. It's like Michael Mann thinks he discovered Jamie Foxx.
I'm about
to scream. So let me just give you an example of how scary this is. Okay, Michael Mann, who did Collateral, he thinks, yeah, this new guy. Here you got a black man that had a hit TV show for 4 years. By Collateral, he had already had 15, 20 movies under his belt, selling out 10 to 15,000 seaters all over America. And they just found out the average white person didn't know who he was until he won the Oscar.
Right.
So that makes me go, as a black male, and I've got 10 movies under my belt and I've been on a TV show for years, how much more do I need to do before they really find out? And what scares me is, Kim, I deal with it on golf courses. I'm going to be on a golf course.
Right.
Buddy knows we'll be in a super white golf course. And like, wow, you're funny. Have you ever thought about like acting or doing like stand-up or something? And you know what I always say, Tony?
What do you say?
If I had done 3 lines on Seinfeld, if I was on 1 episode of Everyone Loves Raymond, if I did 1 guest spot,
if they had one black friend on Friends
or Home Improvement, but here I am on a black TV show. I did like almost 40 episodes of the Jamie Foxx show. They don't have to know who you are.
Hold on, this prime example: we're sitting here talking to a woman who probably don't even know. People don't know Kim has an Emmy nomination.
Yep.
For a, not a black show, but for a show on cable for Curb Your Enthusiasm, and half the people in this country don't even know.
I'm a fan of black comedy.
Being a black person.
Being a black person, actually. And,
not sounding like one, but he's definitely a black person.
Brother's got to work, you know what I mean?
I love this.
Like, in both worlds, it's duality.
Exactly. Thank you very much, buddy. Here's my point, though, and I want you to really talk about this, because I've noticed that the comics that I have seen on television, on Def Jam, on some of these other shows, on BET and elsewhere, there is just so much profanity, and there is so much what I would call low humor, that it seems as if everybody does it, although only certain people do it well and get away with it. Richard Pryor was a different type comic. I mean, he used language, but he was a genius.
Mm-hmm.
Red Fox. But we got folks running around now that are just cussing, and talking about body parts who are not funny.
There are two things that are happening. Comic View was one of the worst things that actually happened to black comedy. And I don't mean as a venue, but what it did is it instantly created a need for comics who were not ready to do TV. Okay. The ability for comics to get better comes through working night after night after night after night. And a lot of these guys that did Comic View 4 and 5 times and in the beginning were not ready for TV.
It got so bad, it was like, hey, if you got a knock-knock joke and you got 3 minutes, you too. Somebody at home, they never told a joke in their life professionally, but around their people, like, you know something? You got 3 jokes? I'm a call. And guess what? They would allow that guy to get on stage, and next thing you know, the world is seeing him, and he calls himself a comic.
The death of Robin Harris, and I'll say that people don't realize this, how his death, his life and his death quickly had a demise to black comedy, because he was so hot.
He was hot.
He was so hot that he used a particular format and a style of comedy, which was picking out faults and things in the audience. But what Robin did, he was a genius with it. He never used it to hurt people. It was used to segue. And so people, he say, oh, Mr. Red Shirt. And he start talking about red shirts. And people would think he was talking about this person. This person would be laughing at the fact that red shirts and shirts are funny.
Right.
Now, what that turned into, everybody thought, I can use joning and embarrassing and talking about your mama, this, that, and the other thing to create an act.
It's almost like just said, buddy. Like so many guys, without even mentioning names, we all know who kind of took that style.
It's
almost like with Tupac. Tupac started the big thug thing. Next thing you know, every guy in the world is a thug. But I don't want to get off. I don't want
to
get off.
I wanted to.
And Jonan, for people that don't know, that's the dozens and planning.
On the West Coast, we call it bagging
or whatever.
Well, I have to cut in and say what my father said.
What'd your father say?
My father said that, you know, because, and I think that's why I haven't really just loosened up with comedy, and I'm always fighting with that. I'm always fighting with profanity and Christian comedy. I'm telling you, it's always a fight because my father said to me, he said, well, Kim, I feel like comics and people that use profanity have a lack of vocabulary.
True.
I said, sometimes certain words are, you know, funnier. If I say something like, ooh, my booty or you know.
Or your rump or your
or my
tush.
Rump, that's not as funny as the other word with an A.
Yep.
It's a punch that makes it laugh, and that could be universal. Certain words, I think when you're talking about the body parts, especially for female comics, it is a turnoff. For some people do not like to hear female comics. That's all we talk about because now you're saying, you know what? She has a lack of intelligence. Mm-hmm. Like Sheryl Underwood, she doesn't really talk about her body parts. Sheryl might be loud and curse and do certain things, but at the same time, she can
funny.
Do political stuff and she can do this and that, and it can be funny. But she does curse in her act.
It just comes down to if you have something to say versus a guy who is degrading women and not funny.
Last thing is this. We're all in Los Angeles, and back during the days of the Comedy Act Theater, comedy was booming out of Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a mecca for it still? Los Angeles.
I mean, I think the only way reason it is the mecca is because everybody from wherever you are in America, Buddy, you're from where?
Gary, Indiana.
Kim Whitley?
Cleveland. Ohio.
They're great examples. I'm one of the rare few dudes, and you know this.
Yes, I did.
Anybody know this? Born and raised in South Central and trying to make some noise in business. Nothing bad with it, but everybody I know, almost all my comrades, everybody I know came from somewhere else to come to this place called Hollywood to make it.
Because
so,
of Hollywood.
Yeah, because of Hollywood. But to answer your question, the mecca, of course, it's still the melting pot. This in New York.
But
this is the melting
the
pot. This is where we
place,
all come.
This is the hardest place
the hardest
to make
place
it.
To perform on a daily basis.
True.
You can go to Indiana, anywhere else, and do a club, and you're killing. You can come to L.A., and people are looking at you because we are saturated. People are like, oh, you're going to have to do better than that.
But
so a
you
lot
know,
of the comics don't do stand-up in Los Angeles.
But you know how it is. When you do work out here and you do get strong,
when
you go
better.
On the world, it makes you, you're a beast.
You're a beast.
You know
you're
what
like,
I mean?
Oh, my God. You are like, I was like, I am the funniest woman ever in Ohio.
And that's how you say, good night. Good night.
You all are crazy, and I'm so happy for it. Thank you for coming
Thank
by.
Thank you.
Thanks for
Tom
having
Cox.
Us.
From our NPR West studios, that was reporter Tony Cox. He was joined by comedians Buddy Lewis, Kim Whitley, and Alex Thomas.